And now Damian Lewis reads the final episode of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey. Marguerite has been captured by Chauvelin, but cried out a warning to Percy and Armand. Chauvelin ordered his men to rush Père Blanchard's hut. Part 8. Escape.
The hut was empty. Chauvelin went to the door and peered into the gloom.
"What is the meaning of this?" he asked.
"I think, citoyen, that there is no one there now," replied one of the soldiers.
"You have not let those four men go?"
thundered Chauvelin menacingly.
"I ordered you to let no man escape alive."
"You ordered us to wait, citoyen, until the tall Englishman arrived. No one came," said the sergeant sullenly.
"But I ordered you just now, when the woman screamed, to rush in and let no one escape."
"But, citoyen, the four men who were there before had been gone some time, I think."
"You think?"
said Chauvelin, almost choking with fury.
"And you let them go?"
"You ordered us to wait, citoyen," protested the sergeant, "and to implicitly obey your commands on pain of death. We waited."
"Hush," said Degas suddenly. "What is that?" In the very far distance could be heard faintly echoing and already dying away the quick, sharp splash of half a dozen oars.
"The schooner's boat,"
Chauvelin gasped. The fugitives must have reached one of the creeks and were by now safely on board the British schooner. As if to confirm this supposition, the dull boom of a gun was heard from out at sea.
"The schooner, citoyen," said Degas quietly. "She's off."
But what of the singer himself? He could not have covered that mile on a rocky cliff in the space of 2 minutes. And only 2 minutes had elapsed between his song and the sound of the boat's oars away at sea. He must have remained behind, and was even now hiding somewhere about the cliffs. Chauvelin felt hopeful once again.
"Bring the light in here," he commanded as he once more entered the hut.
The sergeant brought his lantern, and with a rapid glance Chauvelin noted a couple of overturned stools, and lying in one corner something small and white. It was a crumpled piece of paper, evidently dropped by one of the fugitives in their hurry to get away. The sergeant picked it up and handed it respectfully to Chauvelin. It read,
"I cannot reach you without risking your lives. When you receive this, wait 2 minutes, then creep out of the hut one by one. Turn to your left sharply, and creep cautiously down the cliff. Keep to the left all the time, till you reach the first rock. Behind it in the creek, the boat is on the lookout for you. Give a long, sharp whistle. She will come up. Once on board the Daydream, send the boat back for me. Tell my men that I shall be at the creek, which is in a direct line opposite the Chagri, near Calais."
"Then there is the signature, citoyen," said the sergeant.
But Chauvelin had not waited.
"Which of you knows this coast well?" he shouted to his men.
"I do, citoyen," said one of them.
"There is a creek in a direct line from the Chagri. The Englishman is hoping to reach it. 1,000 francs to each man who gets there before he does."
"I know of a shortcut across the cliffs,"
said the soldier, and rushed forward, followed closely by his comrades. Two soldiers were still holding Marguerite pinioned to the ground, though she lay there in a swoon.
"It is no use mounting guard over a woman who is half dead," Chauvelin said spitefully, "when you have allowed 5 men who are very much alive to escape." "By the by, where is the Jew?"
"Close by here," said Degas. "I gagged him and tied his legs together as you commanded."
Degas led the way to the other side of the hut, where, with his legs tightly pinioned together and his mouth gagged, lay the unfortunate old man. The rope, which had originally been wound round his shoulders and arms, had evidently given way, for it lay in a tangle about his body. But he seemed quite unconscious of this, for he had not made the slightest attempt to move from the place where Degas had originally put him.
"Bring the cowardly brute here," commanded Chauvelin, "and remove the bindings from his mouth."
And as the wretched old man was brought in full light of the moon by the two soldiers, he said,
It was agreed between us that if we overtook my friend the tall stranger before he reached this place, you were to have 10 pieces of gold. But, added Chauvelin with slow emphasis, if you deceived me in your promise, you were to have a sound beating. Here, he said, turning to the soldiers, the buckle end of your 2 belts to this confounded creature. But don't kill him, he added dryly. When that wretch has had his punishment, he said to Degas, the soldiers can drive us in the cart back to Calais. The Jew and the woman can look after each other, he added roughly, until we can send somebody for them in the morning. They can't get very far in their present condition.
Marguerite had regained consciousness and listened to the fast-retreating footsteps of the men. One awful thought had returned. What had become of Percy? What of Armand? Suddenly a sound, the strangest undoubtedly that these lonely cliffs of France had ever heard, broke the silent solemnity of the shore. It was the sound of a good, solid, absolutely British tam. Then Marguerite, who felt she must be dreaming, heard, "Odd's life, but I wish those damned fellows had not hit quite so hard." Only one particular pair of essentially British lips could have uttered those words. In a moment, Marguerite was on her feet. "Percy! Percy!" she cried, tortured between doubt and hope. "I am here! Come to me! Where are you, Percy? Percy!"
"Well, it's all very well calling me, my dear," said the same voice. "But odds life, I cannot come to you. Those damn frog-eaters have trussed me like a goose on a spit, and I am weak as a mouse."
And still Marguerite did not realize whence came that voice. There was no one within sight, except by that rock. Great God! The Jew! He was half crouching, trying vainly to raise himself with his arms tightly pinioned. Marguerite ran up to him, took his head in both her hands, and looked straight into a pair of blue eyes, good-natured, even a trifle amused. "Percy! Percy!" she gasped.
"Thank God! Thank God!" "La, my dear," he rejoined good-humouredly, "we will both do that anon, and you think you can loosen these damned ropes and release me from my inelegant attitude."
She had no knife, her fingers were numb and weak, but she worked away with her teeth, and when at last the rope gave way, he fell in a heap against the rock. Marguerite looked helplessly round her.
"Oh, for a drop of water on this awful beach!" she cried in agony, seeing that he was ready to faint.
"Nay, my dear, personally I should prefer a drop of good French brandy. And you'll dive in the pocket of this dirty old garment, you'll find my flask. I'm damned if I can move."
When he had drunk some brandy, he forced Marguerite to do likewise.
"Percy," she whispered, "can you ever forgive?"
"I am not to forgive, sweetheart. Your heroism, your devotion, which I, alas, so little deserved, have more than atoned for that unfortunate episode at the ball."
"Then you knew," she whispered, "all the time?"
"Yes," he replied tenderly, "I knew all the time."
"But Armand,"
she said with sudden terror.
"Oh, have no fear for Armand," he said. "Did I not pledge you my word that he should be safe? He, with de Tournay and the others, are even now on board the Daydream."
"But how?" she gasped. "I do not understand."
"Yet 'tis simple enough, my dear," he said. "You see, when I found that that brute Chauvelin meant to stick to me like a leech, I thought the best thing I could do, as I could not shake him off, was to take him along with me. I had met Reuben Goldstein in Calais earlier in the evening. For a few gold pieces, he supplied me with this rig out, and undertook to bury himself out of sight of everybody whilst he lent me his cart and nag."
"Yes? And then?" she asked eagerly.
"Then I carried out my little plan. I reckoned on the blind obedience of the soldiers. Chauvelin had ordered them on pain of death not to stir until the tall Englishman came.
The soldiers took no notice of the old man who had driven Chauvelin to this spot. I managed to free my hands, and I hastily scrawled a few important instructions on a scrap of paper. Then I crawled up to the hut. Under the very noses of the soldiers, dropped my little note through a chink in the wall, and waited. In this note, I told the fugitives to walk noiselessly out of the hut, creep down the cliffs, keep to the left until they came to the first creek where the boat of the Daydream would pick them up. I waited for nearly half an hour. When I knew that the fugitives were safe, I gave the signal which caused so much stir. But as he spoke, Marguerite heard a stealthy footfall overhead, and a stone had rolled down from the top of the cliffs right down to the beach below. "What's that?" she whispered in alarm.
"Oh, nothing, my dear," he muttered with a pleasant laugh. "Only a trifle you happen to have forgotten. My friend, Fulkes."
"Sir Andrew!" she gasped with a pang of remorse, for she had indeed forgotten him.
"Fortunately, I met him not far from the Chagri, before I had that interesting supper party with my friend Chauvelin. I told him of a very long, very circuitous road which his men would never suspect, that would bring him here just about the time when we are ready for him."
In the meanwhile, Sir Andrew Fulkes had cautiously worked his way down the cliffs. Blakeney had struggled to his feet.
"Here I am, friend," he said.
"Zooks!" exclaimed Sir Andrew as he recognised his leader. "Where in the name of heaven did you get these extraordinary clothes?"
"Lord, they are a bit quaint, ain't they?" laughed Sir Percy jovially.
"But odds fish," he added with sudden authority. "Now you are here, Fulkes, we must lose no more time. That brute Chauvelin may send someone to look after us."
"But how can we get back?" Marguerite gasped. "The roads are full of soldiers between here and Calais, and—"
"We are not going back to Calais, sweetheart," he said, "but just to the other side of Cap Grinet, not half a league from here. The boat of the Daydream will meet us there."
"The boat of the Daydream?"
"Yes," he said. "Another little trick of mine. When I slipped that note into the hut, I also added another for Armand, which I directed him to leave behind, and which has sent Chauvelin and his men running full tilt back to the Chagri after me. But the first little note contained my real instructions, including those to old Briggs. When well out of sight of Calais, he will send the galley to a creek he and I know of, just beyond Grinet. We will all be safely aboard, while Chauvelin and his men solemnly sit and watch the creek which is just opposite the Chagri."
The many-hued light of dawn was breaking in the east, when at last they reached the creek beyond Grinet. The galley lay in wait. In answer to a signal from Sir Percy, she drew near, and two sturdy British sailors had the honour of carrying my lady into the boat. The rest is silence. Silence and joy for those who had endured so much suffering, yet who now had found a great and lasting happiness. But it is on record that Monsieur Chauvelin, the accredited agent of the French Republican government, was not present at that or any other social function in London after that memorable evening at Lord Grenville's ball.
Damian Lewis was reading the last part of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey. The book was abridged by Sarah Kilgariff and was a CSA Word production for BBC Radio 2 by Clive Stanhope.